Hello, hello. Welcome in. The Golf Show. The Golf Show is brought to you by your local Ontario Subaru dealers. Welcome to uncommon performance in a Subaru with legendary symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive. Brent Gunning here, riding as a solo this week. I rolled up to the starter, said, can you squeeze me in? There's a group of three guys. We're all having a time. They're looking at me, not sure what they're going to get. But don't worry, I got a few friends to come along with me. Sam McKee, not with us this week. Well, he will be with us in a couple of moments' time. He's going to call in, playing an attorney somewhere in the country, I believe. We'll get some details on that from him. Also talk about a wonderful, wonderful day we had at one of these most recent additions to the Score Top 100 list. Of course, that list coming out this week, or the start of it coming out this week. I'll have a little more on that as the show continues. As always, text lines wide open, 590-590. Please include your name and location. If you are putting a peg in the ground somewhere, I want to know where. I want to know who you're playing with. And man, Sam McKee's not here, so I got to do it. The weather report. I'm so sad he's not here because, man, this is a firecracker of a weekend to play some golf. Right now, 17 degrees, feels like 17, barely a cloud in the sky. Perfect morning to get out there. Won't get too hot today. I think we're looking at like a high of 25. Tomorrow, pretty much the same thing. If you were getting out there this weekend, count your blessings, because man, oh man, it's a perfect weekend to do that. I can't stand these too hot rounds. I've caught myself out there in like these 35 degree days a couple of times, and you know, far be it from me to complain about playing golf, but when it gets a little hot, I get a little sleepy. And then the new swing that I won't bore you guys with all the changes that have been happening there, but anytime you're trying to change things, the second you lose a little focus, maybe the swing oil comes into play there, or you lose a little focus because you're tired, all those changes just go right out the window. So, count me out on those 35-degree days. 25, like we're going to get this afternoon, oh, boy, give it to me. Obviously going to take a look at the Open Championship that's coming up next week at arguably, you know, hey, take your pick, the most or second most famous venue in golf, Augusta. And the old course at St. Andrews, either 1A and 1B, depending on which way you look at it. For a lot of people, I'm sure. Obviously, we got the Masters at Augusta every year. It only rolls around once in a while to the old course. Hasn't been back there since 2014. So very, very happy to have the Open Championship at the old course at St. Andrews. That's next week. Of course, plenty of golf being played in that part of the world this week. You got the Scottish Open going on over there. I've been loving it. I am somebody who has a ton of trouble sleeping, and I don't need to bring you into my world of my insomnia. But as a guy who has trouble getting to bed at certain hours, or is up way, way too early at certain hours, a little live golf being on at 4 o'clock in the morning that actually matters and gets the juices flowing is right up my alley. So I'm fired up for the Scottish Open this week, very fired up for the Open Championship next week. And my buddy, John McCarthy, national golf writer for Post Media, he is going to join us to talk about that a little later on. But I told you he'd stop by. He's calling in from parts unknown. He can actually call in. We don't need to get into that too much, but boy, isn't that exciting. Your friend and mine, golf show co-host, Sam McKee. Sammy, how's it going, bud?
Gunner, it's going well, buddy. Just out here in beautiful Lacombe, Alberta, getting ready for the Lacombe Men's Open today. It's just a peach out there. The sun is shining. The Alberta air is blowing. I'm ready to rock, pal. Look.
Now I've heard that you are going to beat the brakes off a friend of ours in the first bracket of the Lacombe Men's Open. Would you like to talk a little trash to a guy who will never hear it on this podcast? Former friend of all yours, current friend of us, Andrew Walker.
Nope. I think I lost you. Are you still there, guys?
No, I'm still here. We still hear you loud and clear.
Okay, yeah. I'm going up against it's a lot of guys competing in this today. It's a big event. And, I don't know how many guys, but, like, it's a club and there's a lot of people involved. And the random throw me against Andrew Walker in the first round here. And, listen, I'm not going to lie to you. The drive here is tense. Like, it's a little tension, right? Like, we're playing and, like, you know, we paid money to be in this tournament. We're playing against each other. It's like, we had a practice round yesterday and I beat him pretty bad. And he's like, I think he's a little sour. Like, if they had a betting line, I think he'd be the dog.
Oh, do you want to set the line right now and then I can text it to him to give him some motivation? Oh, I think we just lost Sammy.
So I'm a little bit nervous about it. So
We got him back. There's Gremlins on the line. I think we should reconnect here, guys. Gremlins have gotten a hold of Sam McKee's phone. Maybe that's Andrew Walker picking at wires because he doesn't want McKee to talk too much trash ahead of time. I very much want to hear this. Also, me and McKee played a wonderful round of golf at a course that's kind of become a part of golf lore because one of our great Canadian men, a winner on tour, it's where he grew up playing the game, Dundas Valley. That just creeped into the Score Top 100 this year, as our boy John Kirkwood, the pro, said there. Number 99, the great one. Never going to complain about that ranking. So I want to get McKee back on the line because, man, we had a day playing there. And also, I really do want to hear what the betting line is for his match in the first round of the Lacombe Men's Open that he's playing in. Wow. Alberta golf getting more love when we're no longer on the air there than it ever did in the times that we were on the air. As I mentioned, he's back. Sam McKee, the Gremlins are no longer tying up his phone line. Okay, here's where we left you. What is the betting line for you v. Andrew Walker today at the Lacombe Men's Open? No, okay. We lost him. It's okay. We tried. We really did. We did our best. If McKee's able to text me what the betting line will be, I'll get that out to everywhere because I know we're all so concerned about a fake betting line and a thing that no one can lay any money on other than those two guys playing each other. But I'm happy to hear from him. I stole his bit with the weather report. I know I didn't do it justice like he does because I didn't talk about whether or not you should have a tarp on at any point in time in there. But it was nice of Sam McKee to try to connect with us. So we tried 0-for-2. That's fine. You get the breakfast ball, and when you dunk them both in the drink, you just move on and drop something up by the pond. So I think that's what we're going to do here. As I mentioned a little bit with him, McKee and I got a chance to get out and play Dundas Valley. This is the course Mackenzie Hughes grew up playing on. This is the place he goes back and plays now. And, you know, look, we have a ton of amazing courses in this country. We have a ton of amazing courses in this part of the world. But it was really, really cool to just kind of walk around and think that, yeah, this is where, you know, a guy who we've seen have huge moments on the PGA Tour, winner on the PGA Tour, possible President's Cup guy, to think that this is where, you know, you're following in his footsteps. This is where he learned it all. There's a really, really cool honor they've bestowed upon him there. They have a short course there, and it is named after him. It's the Mackenzie Hughes par 3 course, or the short course. I can't remember exactly what they call it there, but it's one of the two. And it was incredible to kind of see in the clubhouse all the pictures of him up there. And the course itself, I mean, this is a new addition to Top 100. I believe they were an honorable mention in the last edition of the rankings in 2020. And it's Score Golf who puts out these annual Top 100 rankings. And, you know, hey, a different media entity than us, but give them the love nonetheless. I mean, this is a tentpole thing for golf kind of in our country. We're constantly looking at those rankings. The first couple of them dropped. I believe we're up to the first 10 of the Top 100 have been announced. And, yeah, anytime you get to crack one off your list, it's definitely an exciting thing. Really cool design. Stanley Thompson, why wouldn't it be? Feels like he's designed, I don't know, 75% of the golf courses in this country, or at least the really good ones. And it was a really cool test. A lot of really interesting holes. The greens were incredibly tricky. Now, we've all played places with really slick greens, really fast greens, and I wouldn't quite say that was the case there. It was just hard to get a feel for them. Speed was tough to dial in. I probably left 7 putts short, dead in the heart, about an inch or two short. Just couldn't get the speeds dialed in. Tricky little breaks late. Very, very fun course to play. And I got to give a shout-out to the pro we were out there with, John Kirkwood. This guy, Kirky, a character, a legend. Loved playing with this guy. Anytime you roll up to the tee box and the guy's got his Ian Poulter tartan pants on, you know you're going to be in for a good time. And he more than lived up to that. I saw him rip driver off the deck more times than I've seen in my life. And when you've got a PGA of Canada professional doing that, it definitely carries a little more weight than when an idiot like me is trying to rip driver off the deck. So I cannot thank the folks at Dundas Valley enough for having us out. An incredible place. Definitely lived up to the hype. And if you ever have a chance, consider yourself very lucky to get out there. And then, like I said, I cannot overstate how cool it was to just kind of think that, yeah, this is where Mack Hughes learned to play the game. This is where he became the guy he's been. And it was really cool to hear how much of it he, how much a part of that place he still is when he comes back. So just a massive, massive shout out to the folks at Dundas Valley. And as I always say, text lines wide open, 590-590. If you have a lovely golf course and you'd like to invite myself and Sam McKee to come play it, we are always, always, always open to hearing that. As I mentioned, Scottish Open's going on this week. It's a weird, it's a weird week on in the world of pro golf, right? Because anytime you have a tee up to the major, anytime you have that tee up to a major, you have some guys who don't want to play. Some guys think the only way to get ready the week before a major is to play it, and you want to have conditions that replicate that. So you have a ton. I think it's 14 of the top 15 players in the world starting at the Genesis Scottish Open. Then you've also got the Barbasol, and that's a weird event too because it is co-sanctioned by not only the PGA Tour but the DP Euro Tour. So you've got some players that would normally not be in America playing over there. Obviously, I'm going to start with the Genesis Scottish Open when you look at the field, but we do have a Canadian atop the leaderboard at the PGA Tour event, the Barbasol, this week. So we will give Adam Svensson his due before it's done. You better believe that. In terms of what's going on at the Scottish Open right now, Cameron Tringali leading the way, absolutely lost his mind in round one. Fires a 61, and within that scope, he had birdies on, let's just count it up here, 1, 2, 3, 4. He had birdies on 7 of 8 straight holes. He closes, he opens his back nine with 6 straight birdies. The putter was just nuclear that day. Comes back to earth a little bit in round two, 72. Still has a 3-shot lead there on Gary Woodland. Now, I don't actually think you need to focus too much on Cameron Tringali. Gary Woodland's a little interesting. Of course, this guy's got some major pedigree because of his win at Pebble Beach. What was that, 2018, 2019 at the U.S. Open. He'll be in the majors for a few years to come. And when you have a guy who can control his trad the way Woodland can at a major venue that requires creativity and some different shots, he's interesting. Do not take this as me saying to pick Gary Woodland next week. But if he shows some real form and he seems like he's kind of figured out Lynx golf, it will definitely be an interesting thing to see. If you have a guy like that who is showing form in major championships, that he's able to control his ball, play the creative shots. Because honestly, for so many of these guys, Lynx golf is just not something they're familiar with. And I'm not going to put Woodland in that category. This guy's been a pro for a long time. He's played all around the world for a long time. But, you know, I think of a guy like Joaquim Niemann, and they were showing him in some practice rounds at the Scottish Open, and he's actually had a pretty solid week so far. He finds himself T8 after back-to-back rounds of 69. He's 2 under. He's 5 back of the lead, but, you know, still 36 holes to play here. But a guy like Joaquim Niemann, they showed him hitting some of these. Now, this is obviously more of a trick shot that you don't see that often, although we have seen it in competition, is like the bank shots off of brick walls near the greens. He was having fun with it. He was laughing, but it's just not a style of golf he grew up playing. You know, this guy from Chile, obviously a lot of undulation there. Then you get into more Texas, and yeah, there is a little bit of that kind of sand belt style golf, but it's not quite Lynx golf. And I was curious to see how he'd respond. You know, you look at him, and he fires 2 rounds of 69. Again, I want to see what he does this weekend. That's a guy who I'm not going to sit here and tell you to pick him heading into the Open Championship next week, but I'd be taking a look at what his top 10 odds are. If you can get a decent number on him at top 20, that'd be somebody who's really interesting there. You know, another name who's kind of flirting around, this guy obviously has major championship pedigree, although he hasn't shown it for a while, is Justin Rose. Now, this is a guy who I thought was done. There was a 2 or 3 years ago, he made the club change to Homa, and then I believe now he's back to the TaylorMade clubs he had most of his success with. You know, we go back to the Sunday at the RBC Canadian Open, and, you know, that may seem like a long time ago, but it's less than a month away, or we're less than a month removed from that. This guy posts a 60. Now, obviously, St. George's and the old course at St. Andrews could not be more different tests for a golfer to face. But I think he's another guy to watch. If he's able to find some form, and so much or so often at these open championships, it's about knowing how to play that style of golf. It's about knowing how to make your mistake. And honestly, I know people don't like hearing this, especially from me, because I go to it way, way too often when we're talking Leafs. But a little luck is involved, okay? You're going to get the bad side of a ridge. And I'm not talking about when you're putting. I'm talking about the ridges in the fairway because of the humps and the swales and the pot bunkers. And yeah, of course, you can avoid them. Of course, there is more than luck involved. But you do need breaks. You do need bounces in a tournament like the Open Championship. And that's why I'm really, really curious as to see how a guy like Niemann responds there. For Rose, you know, he's a guy who has proven he can compete in majors. He's a guy who has proven he knows how to, you know, get around in big moments. Won the Olympic gold. I'm not going to put that on par with a major, but it does mean something. And he's another guy that I'd kind of look at those top 10, top 20 odds. Do not expect him to win, but could easily see him kind of being in the mix. You know, another guy up near the top of the Scottish Open this week, the X-Man, Xander Schauffele. I'm done being disappointed in him by majors, but I am not done thinking he's going to be in contention. He's just, as a guy, he's kind of similar, albeit he doesn't have the pedigree, to a guy like Zalatoris, who just always, more times than not, now Zalatoris is a supercharged version of this. Zalatoris is basically Koepka from a few years ago without the wins, where you can go into any given major championship at any given time and know that guy is going to be a part of the picture. Not say he's going to win, but he's going to be a part of the picture. And how can I not talk about, if I'm looking at guys atop the leaderboard who could have some, who have some form and who should be a bit of a danger man next week? He just won the last major we played, Matt Fitzpatrick. He opens with a 71, bounces back with a 76. He's just four shots off the lead now. We know all the story about him with Fitzpatrick has been the distance gained, the speed he gained. He's no longer, you know, a guy who's playing from 40 yards back of everybody. But you look at his ability to putt the ball. You look at his ability with his short game, even though he has that chipping that's cross-handed that would make me think he's never going to hit a good chip. He apparently always does. And the other thing I think that's interesting about Fitzpatrick is his copious note-taking. This is a guy who, I believe it was Daniel Rapoport who had the report on it. Yeah, it would have been him because he had the great profile at the end of the U.S. Open. This is a guy who, no matter what the round is, it's a practice round. It's a round with his buddies. It is Sunday at the U.S. Open. He has a little notebook, and after every shot, he writes down notes. And the notes are, so he knows how good the shot was. Because you can see a world where, you know, you miss your shot, but you get a good kick off a slope, and you end up 2 feet from the hole, and that worked out well, but it wasn't what you meant to do. He knows exactly where he wants to land it every time, and where he thinks it should stop beyond that. But he takes a note of how far off was he by distance in terms of length, how far off was he in distance in terms of line. And having those copious notes, guarantee he's been around the old course a few times in his life to be able to have that knowledge kind of baked into what he's doing. He's somebody who's really, really interesting to watch. And if you are interested in Fitzpatrick, I suggest you jump on that now, because if he has a good weekend at the Scottish, that number is going to go through the roof, and there's a world where he could be the betting favorite if he pulls out a win this weekend. Not saying it will happen, but if you like Fitzpatrick, you better jump on him before he has a big, big weekend at the Scottish Open. Before we go to the Barbasol, and I do want to touch on that, there was some news out of the Royal and Ancient, which is the governing body that, of course, takes care of the Open Championship. Now, everyone was watching to see what the USGA would do in terms of the LIV guys, and they said they're allowed to play. Everyone was watching what the Royal and Ancient would do with the LIV guys in terms of are they allowed to play the Open, and they are. But I thought this was interesting. So it's not quite the champion's dinner that we think of with the Masters all the time, but there is a champion's playing day, a champion's field and champion's dinner at the RNA every year for all the past champions. Think of all the legends who have won this tournament throughout the years. You know, Seve and Arnold and Jack and Tiger and Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson and Zach Johnson. All these guys are all welcome. Well, a guy who's won it twice is Greg Norman. He, of course, is the chairman, alpha, top dog, whatever you want to call him, presidente at LIV Golf. And this is the statement the RNA put out about him not being invited. In response to inquiries regarding the RNA celebration of Champions Field and the Champions Dinner, we can confirm that we contacted Greg Norman to advise him we decided not to have him attend on this occasion. The RNA said in a statement, "The 150th Open is an extremely important milestone for golf, and we want to ensure the focus remains on celebrating the championship and its heritage. Unfortunately, we do not believe that would be the case if Greg were to attend. We hope that when circumstances allow, Greg will be able to attend in the future." You're going to cause us a headache. You're not coming. So here's the interesting, that's the very, very short Coles Notes edition of that. If there's a world where this quiets down with LIV Golf, I think eventually it will. I'm not going to keep screaming into the void forever. If LIV Golf keeps going and Greg Norman is invited back next year, then this isn't them taking a stance. But if things quiet down and they still don't want Greg Norman as a part of this, this is a great politician type statement from the RNA. They take a stand of saying, "We don't want you here, Greg Norman," but they give themselves enough wiggle room in that, well, it's not because we think LIV is bad. It's because LIV is controversial right now. We're not going to stake an opinion on how we necessarily feel about LIV Golf, but we're not going to invite the chairman. This gives them enough wiggle room that if LIV takes off and it becomes the thing that they hope it is, they haven't slapped them in the face or they haven't completely turned their back on them. But if it goes the way, personally, I hope it would go, where LIV does go away, then you have a world where they can say, well, look, we always turned our back on Greg Norman. We didn't want any part of this. It's the perfect kind of towing the line segment there. And that's something interesting to watch. Now, the big thing going forward is these championships, they don't want to be the one not to, you know, the Royal and Ancient or the USGA or eventually Augusta National is going to have to come forward and make a statement on this. They don't want to make a call on LIV Golf. The easiest thing for them to do, if these entities do not want LIV Golf to thrive, the easiest thing they can do is use the tons of clout they have in the game to make sure that world ranking points are never given out to any LIV Golf events. Because if that happens, then you're effectively choking these guys out of the majors sooner rather than later. Some of them will be exempt for the next 5 years. Some of them will have lifetime exemptions. But if you want these LIV guys not to be able to qualify, then those governing bodies have to push for it to be a tour that gets no world golf ranking points. Or if you really want to screw them over, make it be as infantile as possible and say, "What? We did give them points. We just do it based on the strength of field and all these other things." But if these governing bodies don't throw their weight behind not stopping LIV from getting world ranking points for tournaments, then they're going to have to come out and make a decision one way or another. And that's why I could see a world where they are lobbying the rankings group to say that there should not be points for LIV Golf. I believe we have a couple of clips on what the guys who have been pretty staunch defenders of the PGA Tour. I first want to start with Rory McIlroy on LIV. I mean, he has been maybe the biggest backer of the tour. I think back to when he was up here for the RBC Canadian Open, it's when everything was really swirling, and he was taking a very, very defiant stance. I believe that, you know, if McIlroy is, and I don't think this is 100% changing his tune, but I do think it is him being a touch more realistic. Let's hear from him, and then I'll have more to say on Rory's comments.
Messy. I wish it hadn't got that messy. And in hindsight, I think there were probably steps that were missed that wouldn't have made it as messy. But I think in the long term, it will make the game better. But right now, it's just that there's this disruption that's happening. And with disruption comes change and forced change. And I think this has just sort of forced the tour's hands a little bit. And they have to adapt and change. And I think that's what they're going to have to try to do.
Do you think there will have to be peace talks between the three tours at some stage?
I think so. I think that needs to happen. There's so much chat about where the money's coming from in Saudi and everything else. Like, they sponsor so many other things, and they're all over sport. I understand people's reservations with everything, but at the same time, if these people are serious about investing billions of dollars in the golf, I mean, I think ultimately that's a good thing. All the narrative isn't good. It's splitting the game instead of everyone coming together, and think everyone needs to try to come together a little bit more.
Is there a resentment between the players who are still on the PGA Tour and the DP World and the players who have decided to defect?
I think defection is a strong word. I understand why guys have went, especially the guys that are sort of in the latter stages of their career. And I mean, if I was in their position, I mean, I'd seriously have to think about doing the same thing. Like, I understand. Is there a difference of opinion? Yes. But, I mean, I can argue with you about a certain thing, but I'm still going to like you at the end of it. So there's a difference of opinion, and I would have done things a little bit differently. But I think at this stage, you know, if you go over and play in a different tour, then go and play in a different tour. And, you know, I think this whole having your cake and eating it type thing is what the resentment resolves within the membership. But for me, I don't resent anyone. A lot of these guys are my friends, and they're still going to be my friends regardless of the decisions they make.
There is Rory McIlroy. Credit to the BBC for that there. I mean, honestly, it's funny. Anytime we get these Open Championship weeks or Scottish Open, I love our media here, of course, but man, Sky Sports, BBC, they do an awesome job, and love getting them in the mix a little more there. In terms of what you heard from Rory there, I think he nailed it. Go talk to him, figure this out, because the infighting doesn't make any sense. I don't think that's a guy who is saying, I was wrong about Liv, maybe we should just cut a deal. But I do think it's a guy who is getting sick and tired of getting asked about this all the time. And until there is some certainty, he is going to continue to get asked about it forever. Because this world where, again, I still in my heart of hearts think, the guys like Brooks, the guys like Bryson, a Taylor Gooch type guy, they want to live in a world where they get to go make their fat checks, paying for live, and then they get to play in the Memorial, and they get to play in the Arnold Palmer, and they get to play at the Players. They want to have this split where they play all the glamour events of the PGA Tour, then they go get the big money for the Saudi events, and I don't think that's a healthy thing for the game. If the PGA Tour does, I would love a world, quite honestly, where you take the WGCs and try to turn them into something else. If you say you need team golf or you need something like that, there are already these events outside of the PGA Tour that you can do that with, and I think that that'd be a great kind of place to begin on that. But the fact that Rory is taking that stance, to me, it's not him saying, I am done with this, I don't want to... I changed my mind on everything I've been saying. It's a guy who says, I am so sick and tired of this. Can you please just figure it out? I am a golfer. I am not the commissioner of the PGA Tour, and I'm getting a little sick and tired of having to act like I am. And honestly, I can't blame him for that. The other part of this, and again, this is so inside golf, but if I can't say this on the golf show, I'll never be able to say it anywhere. The idea, there has been another party that has floated effectively the same thing. I believe the gentleman's name is Andy Gardner, and he wants to do what I was suggesting, the idea of taking the WGCs and turning them into this team event with super purses, and you have it within the body of the PGA Tour, and the biggest part of that is that the money made from that would go back, obviously, you know, he wants his cut, but a chunk of that would go back to the PGA Tour. That seems to make a lot more sense to me, keeping it all in-house. But here's the problem. When you let a good idea, and here's the thing, what Liv is doing, I don't think it's working, but it is an interesting and good idea. And when you don't take advantage of it, somebody else is going to. And that is the lane that the PGA Tour has left open here. I'm a little surprised I had that many thoughts, to be perfectly honest, by myself. Love hearing from my boy, Sam McKee. Good luck to him in the Lacombe Open. I will still search for those odds. In his first round match, and I'm really only doing that so I can give the guy he's playing a little fuel for the fire. A lot more to get into on the show. Got to tee up the Open Championship, 150th edition at the Old Course. That's next week. Scottish Open going on right now, and we have got a Canadian with a lead on the PGA Tour. Huge shout out to Adam Svensson. A lot to get into on the final segment of the Golf Show. As always, the Golf Show is brought to you by your local Ontario Subaru dealers. Welcome to Uncommon Performance in a Subaru with legendary symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive. John McCarthy joins me next right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back. Golf Show brought to you by your local Ontario Subaru dealers. Welcome to Uncommon Performance in a Subaru with legendary symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive. Very, very happy to be joined for, I think, the first time this year, which feels like a borderline crime, national golf writer, Post Media, your friend and mine, John McCarthy. Johnny, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing well, doing well. Just me. I have to warn you. I didn't warn you ahead of time. Bad form on my part. No Sam McKee here. So that means like two less Bryson questions, but a little more niche stuff from me. So I hope that's okay.
I hope he's on the golf course.
He literally is not here because he is playing in a tournament in Alberta. And he went all the way to Alberta to play in a big match play tournament. And he ends up playing a guy he knows in the first bracket because golf is the smallest world in the world or smallest game in the world. So there you go. Yes, he is playing. So not here, not talking about golf, but playing golf all at the same time. So, John, first thing I wanted to talk to you about, I mean, obviously, Scottish Open's going on this week. We got a Canadian atop the leaderboard at the Barbasol. That's exciting. But obviously, I want to look ahead. 150th Open next week, old course at St. Andrews. And it always strikes me, and this is the case with the Open every year, but it really gets hammered home when you go to the old course that, you know, I think for most people, they consider Augusta and the old course some version of 1A and 1B of the greatest golf courses or the most famous golf courses in the world. And all I can think about is how different now, having never been to both either place, you've been to both, I would imagine, having never been to either, it feels like they could not feel more different. The Open Championship, to me, watching it on TV, it always has this open feel like you, I know you can, I know you got to buy a ticket, but it feels like you could just wander over and stroll the grounds, and it's just this open feel for everybody, and the Masters is the Masters. And I just love that in this great game of ours, that two of these pinnacle events could not kind of feel more different.
Oh, no, you're exactly right, because the one thing I always think of when I think of the old course is in 2015, I got there a week early, so I was there on the Sunday before the tournament, and I went to the course, and all I saw was it was kids and families and dogs walking all over the old course, and I was like, what's going on here? And they said, oh, the course is closed every Sunday. I was like, yeah. The course is closed on Sunday. And so when I was there, it's a dog park on Sundays, other than the Open Championship Sunday. But the week before, the course is closed, and it's closed to golfers, other than players in the tournament are allowed to practice. But they have to practice with people there walking their dogs. So I was standing on the 18th, walking down the 18th fairway in 2015, and poor Marshall's in the middle of the fairway, and he's trying to wave to a girl doing cartwheels on the 18th green to tell her that Sergio Garcia is standing in the fairway trying to hit an approach shot in. So it's a scene you wouldn't get in any other place. And I think it also is a bit why golf is more tightly knit to their culture, because these courses are open to the public every Sunday. You can walk it. So it really does have a feel very different than anywhere in North America.
That girl has no idea how much danger she was in. We've seen what Sergio does to bunkers he doesn't like. I can only imagine how he feels about somebody doing cartwheels in his way. And you're right. And like, I love the golf culture we have over here, but it's always amazing to me just how completely different it feels on this side of the pond versus the other. And yeah, I do love that we get this. The other thing I gotta admit that I've loved is, and this hasn't just occurred this year, it's definitely been an ongoing thing for a few years now, but I love the field you get at the Scottish Open this week, and I love that we really do have this kind of build up to Lynx Golf. You know, I've been thinking this whole time about LIV, and they're saying, oh, it's got this different feel. I feel like if we just had two or three of these a year where all the big boys are over in Europe, and be it a Lynxy style course or be it somewhere in Spain, or I feel like if we just had this quote unquote kind of more worldwide feel, LIV wouldn't have the appeal to some people that it does, because I love that golf's on at a different time of day this week. And I love that we get this Lynx look for a couple weeks in a row. I love watching stuff on the PGA Tour, but it is nice to kind of get away from the park line or the coastal style courses for a while. And it'd be nice, honestly, I totally get why they do it this week with the build up and everybody's over there, but it'd be nice if we were able to have almost like how tennis has like a clay court season and a grass court season. I would love if we had just a month of Lynx golf season and everybody was over there. I think it'd be so interesting for the game.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I mean, it's almost like two different games, because, you know, golf over there, there's so much left to chance. And when you talk about the pros on the PGA Tour, the last thing they want is really anything left to chance. You talk about what courses they like. They like courses where everything's right in front of them. Oh, this is a great course. Everything's in front of me. Well, you know, nothing's in front of you on a Lynx course. It's, you know, you're sort of at the will of the golf course. You know, a good shot can have a bad result. A bad shot can have a good result. And And that's sort of the essence of golf as it started. But it's sort of in North America, because of our conditions, our, you know, softer turf, we have more target golf here. So it has morphed into a precision sport, you know, of perfection. And golf was never really meant to be a sport of perfection, and it never gets shown more than when it's links golf, when really, you know, blind shots and the ball trundling up onto the green, it takes so much more creativity. And I remember Tiger Woods as 18-year-old, he actually recognized that, and he said, "I can't wait to get over there, because think of all the shots I have and think of what I can do over there." So even, you know, as an 18-year-old, he realized that the game is so many more opportunities to show off your creativity in that kind of game compared to a target style game that we have in North America. And we'll see that this week, and we've already seen it this week, and we'll see it next week at the Old Course. There is no better place to watch a golf tournament than the Old Course.
No, and I do love that. And it does make me think of these guys who can just do whatever they want with a golf ball. And, you know, I know he's already picked up a major this week, so I'm hardly backing an underdog here. But when you say that, the first guy I think of is Justin Thomas. You know, it's weird because he has been so steeped in North American golf. Like, we all know the story. His granddad, PGA professional. His dad, PGA professional. Him, won the PGA championship twice. If anybody knows how to play target golf, it's him. But he also has every shot in the bag. He could hit it high, he could hit it low, he could bend it both ways. And it just seems to me like those are the type of guys that I'm dying to see, like, them take on the challenge. And not that he's never done it before, but when you mention that, of course Tiger is the master of that. And even at his advanced age, like, we think back to, what was it, 2019 in Mexico, when he hit that crazy cut out of the bunker around the trees. Like, he's still got that in him. But yeah, you're right, I'm really excited to see some of these guys. And then, quite honestly, on the other side of things, I'm very excited to see guys early on in their golfing journey who are in that kind of Tiger state, who aren't Tiger, who have never had to do this. And it's going to be a very interesting challenge for those guys on kind of the other side of things. I can only imagine how many lessons are going to get learned this week and next by guys who are just doing it for the first time.
No, I think you nailed it there with Justin Thomas. Like Bones has said, he came on his bag because he saw a player that had every shot in the book. And now you have every shot. And now the question is, can he embrace the style of play? A lot of players have a hard time embracing the fact that, you know, good shots can turn out bad over there. But if you've got everything in the arsenal, you have the tools. But now it's a matter of going over there and embracing it. And Ricky Fowler's a funny player because, you know, he never really materialized into what we thought he would be in, North America. But over there, he embraced it, and people recognized it at a young age. You're like, this is a guy that is embracing the challenge, and you see him, and it's that Tom Watson look when you're walking down the fairway with the umbrella out, facing the elements, trudging on. You don't care. The good things happen, bad things happen. You keep walking forward until the round's done. And it's not an easy thing to do as a perfectionist, which all these guys are. So that's the beauty of it. We get to watch, you know, the most challenging part of golf is, you know, your mind dealing with bad things happening. As we all know, bad things happen to us on the golf course a lot. But it's fun to watch bad things happen to these guys. And you get to see the guys that are able to put that umbrella forward, trudge on, and keep going till the end of the round. And there's nothing better.
I'm going through a swing change right now, which, as you've seen, is necessary. So you don't even want to know what's going on up here. The snakes that are fighting or mating in my brain. I don't even know what's going on up there. And then you mentioning Tom Watson. I don't think I'll ever forgive Stuart Sink for winning the Open Championship. How dare he deprive us of that moment? And if we're going to talk about old guys at the Open, you know, I have to give you the stock Tiger question here. Does he have any magic in him? What do you think? He was cruising around in a cart at that Pro-Am he played at Adair Manor earlier this week or last week. Do you have any hope at all? I mean, I think it's going to go similar to how it went last time. He has one pretty good round in the first two. He gets to the weekend, and then I just think the body lets him down. That's kind of my gut for what happens. Where are you at with Tiger heading into the weekend?
Well, I mean, if I had to make a bet, I think you're right. But I learned a long time ago not to bet against this guy, and then he proved it again in 2019 at the Masters. So I'm do I think he's going to play well? Probably not. If he does, will I be shocked? No, I won't. So, I mean, there's no player with as many shots as Tiger Woods. He's won at the Open at St. Andrews twice. So we're all hoping that there's some magic left in it. We're going to see. I like the fact that he skipped the U.S. Open because, you know, that probably wasn't a tournament for him, and he was laboring so bad in Tulsa, so at the PGA Championship. So I think he's done everything he can do. So now we're gonna find out, and obviously I think every golf fan in the world hopes that there's a little left in that canteen.
Oh, I mean, I'll be heartbroken if it happens, but what we wouldn't give just to have, like, the honorary, like, Bernhard Langer Saturday at the Masters moment where it's like, ooh, three back. The leaders aren't teeing off for an hour, but he's three back. Look at this. Like, just give me that moment of the feels there. We can't go the whole time without talking about Liv, but I think I did a pretty good job of talking about other things. I am going to tie this into the Open Championship. I'm sure you noticed Greg Norman not invited to the RNA celebration of Champions Field in the Champions Dinner. Now, they did a great politician-like statement here saying it's because of the controversy surrounding him that they don't want him here. Maybe in years going forward that he will be invited back. To me, that feels like they're kind of playing both sides of things. Obviously, they don't want to, you know, give a handshake or a hug to Liv Golf, but I don't think they want to completely slam the door there either. What did you make of Greg Norman kind of not be invited for all that back, and does it kind of change your opinion of where you think the RNA and I guess Augusta as well are at with Liv Golf?
Yeah, it's very difficult right now because I think everybody in the in the traditional golf world wants to sort of shun these guys, but they all now realize that they kind of have to leave the door open a bit. Even Rory McIlroy sort of walking back some of his comments, and it's because we just don't know where it's going to go, and it's already proved that it's not going away, and it's drawn, you know, this many players, all of them at this point in time, sort of either realistically washed up or their bodies are banged up. But it's only going to take, you know, if the Golf Week story is mentioning that, you know, Jordan Spieth might have an offer and Cam Smith, if guys like that in their prime, hungry young players start going there, we're going to have no choice but to, this thing will be more real than it is right now. And I think the RNA is, and probably everybody right now is in a wait and see attitude, and we sort of have to see where this thing's going to go. So it's I don't mind them closing their door for him this year, but I think, like everybody, they're sort of, you know, leaving it open an inch just in case this thing turns out to be what he hopes it will be, Greg Norman.
Yeah, I do think going forward, or when we look back on this, if Liv does succeed and it becomes whatever entity it foresees itself being, and it survives for the next 5-10 years going forward beyond that, I do think we're all going to look back. And to me, the thing I can't totally understand, and maybe you can help me here, is what if these bodies do have cold feet about Liv, if they do want to, you know, choke it out before it really gets going, to use way too dark of a metaphor for 9:48 on a Saturday morning. But if they wanted to do that, why wouldn't all these governing bodies just come out and say, no world ranking points. We do not want you. You can play in all the championships you've qualified for, but while you're playing in that tour, you're never going to qualify for any others. It feels to me like, in hindsight, I know it's easy to say now, that was the only way to ever completely stop this from getting going. That wouldn't have stopped Phil. It wouldn't have stopped DJ, but it might have stopped an Abraham Answer or somebody like that.
Yeah, and I think what it is, and I'll give them credit for this, is they, at the heart of hearts, they don't want to, they want to keep the competition an open competition. They don't want to stop something for the sake of stopping it. If the world's best players want to play there, I give them credit because they want to say, okay, if this thing happens, we don't want to be the Open Championship or the Masters of the U.S. Open with 20 of the best 30 players. So in that respect, everybody in the status quo world of golf probably wants to keep things the way they are, but they don't want to do it at the sake of a great championship, at the sake of finding out who the best golfer in the world is. I mean, if we're not going to St. Andrews to find out who the best player in the world is, what are we doing? Like, what are we going there for? So that's the reason we're going there. And if the best players in the world end up playing somewhere else, I mean, we might not like it, they might not like it, but they want them in this championship because, I mean, realistically, that's why we're all there. We want to find out who the best golfer is, and it really doesn't matter where they play. If they're going to only meet 4 times a year, we need to find out 4 times a year who the best player is. And if it's the only place that's going to be the majors where they all play together, then that's how it's going to be. And and it's really for the better of the game if all the best players play.
Yeah, that is interesting that, you know, it's there. I honestly hadn't thought of it from that perspective, that you wouldn't think the majors could become more important. But if it is a truly fractured golf world, and that's the only time you see it, if you're the Masters, if you're the Royal and Ancient, if you're the USGA, obviously the PGA has a slightly more complicated relationship with this. But if you're the other three, it just ratchets up the importance of your events even more. And you ask, what would we be doing if we're at St. Andrews without the best players in the world? Apparently, we're walking our dogs on a Sunday. Apparently, that's what we'd be doing there. Last one from me before we let you go. I confess, I haven't been paying the closest of attention to it, but I have to give a shout out. Adam Svensson leading the way at the Barbasol. If he wins, he gets a 2-year exemption on tour. And, you know, an event like the Barbasol, it is always good to kind of fly under the radar, an opposite field event the week before a major. So many of the best players are on the other side of the pond, but I don't think we can overstate what it means for anybody. But hey, he's Canadian, so we really, really care about it. This would be a huge boon to his career. Obviously, a lot of golf to go, plenty of holes to go to before he's able to get it. But having a 2-year exemption, especially with the changes to the rules, that would be massive for a guy like him.
No, it certainly would. And Adam Svensson's a guy that I've been following since he turned pro in 2015, and I had very, very high hopes for him. Like when he turned pro, I thought this might be the best Canadian golfer of our generation. He played D2 at Barry University, won two national titles there. He won 9 of his last 14 starts in the NCAA Division II. Then he turned pro and went to a tour called the Swing Thought Tour. What did he do there? He won his first 3 starts. So then he goes to Korn Ferry qualifying. It was probably web.com or something, but yeah. He goes to Korn Ferry tour qualifying, wins by 7 shots at Korn Ferry tour qualifying. He had 100 junior wins by 16 years old. So he is probably our most decorated junior golfer ever. He obviously can go low. I think in his first PGA start in Hawaii, he shot a 64 on the first day. So this is a guy that really had every single thing going for him when he turned pro, made the PGA Tour, and then kind of lost his card his first year, and then he got it back this year. But I honestly think that if he gets that first win, it wouldn't be the only win. So, I mean, I have very high hopes for him. He's a fantastic iron player. So if he can, if he's driving the ball in the fairway, he is attacking pins all the time. I talked to Graham Dillette at the U.S. Open, and Graham Dillette was a player that sort of plotted his way around the course and was very consistent. He said, but Adam's a guy that goes low. He's like, he might not be consistent every week or every round, but when he's playing, he's shooting the 62s or 63s. So that's what kind of wins on the PGA Tour now. They're all so good. You know, it's hard to win with the sort of steady hand. You have to be the guy that just goes lights out. And there's very few players out there that can go as lights out as Adam Svensson. So it's going to be awesome to watch, and I'm excited to see. He was a junior phenom, and now we're hoping he can finally get across the finish line.
Oh, for shame on me. I did not realize he had all that pedigree. Good thing I asked you the question. John, really, really enjoyed it. I love seeing you at all these events, but I'd like to actually play some golf with you this year. Maybe we could get out, but it was great talking to you. Thanks so much, Johnny.
Thank you.
There he goes, John McCarthy, national golf writer, post-media. Love, love, love getting his thoughts there. Adam Svensson, you heard the pedigree he's got there. He's got a 2-shot lead now at the Barbasol. Second round still finishing up after thunderstorms yesterday. He does have his second round in the book. Of course, at the Genesis Scottish Open this week, that's where most of the world's best are. Cameron Tringali continues to lead it, and everybody's getting ready for the Open Championship, 150th edition at the Old Course. Last winners there, Zach Johnson, 2015, Louis Oosthuizen, 2010, Tiger Woods in 2005, Tiger Woods again in 2000. That was when he completed the career Grand Slam. And John Daly in 1995. Cannot wait to watch some Open Championship next week. Sam McKee's got you covered. I'll be off next week. Golf Show will be back next week, but we have programming continuing right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.